The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Nadine, here's Bill Meyer.
Here it is. Happy Conspiracy Theory Thursday, June 27th. It is debate day. And yes, we are going to be carrying this. I'm really going to be intrigued with how this is going to play out, given the fact that the microphones will mute. And it's almost like CNN will be using technology to kind of control two uncontrollable people, I guess. Yeah, two people running for president. One the current president, one the past president, wanting to be the next president for a second term. And, they're going to mute the microphones in between. We're going to carry it. In fact, we're going to start coverage from the Salem Radio Network at 4 o'clock with Hugh Hewitt and the various other folks there from that network who will be providing analysis and talking to a lot of people that that kind of know what's going on in the lead up to the debate tonight at 6 o'clock on CNN. And we'll be simulcasting that. And so if you're not watching it, able to watch it, we'll be able to still provide it to you one way or the other. And I just don't know how. I don't think anybody does know how it's going to play out. And my concern, though, is that it'll be great to not have, chaos like we heard a number of years ago when they last debated, Biden and Trump. But on the other hand, I'm also concerned that will we not be able to have any kind of meaningful back and forth conversation that might actually give us a little more insight? Or is CNN more or less telling us, hey, we just don't want an excrement storm? And come on, you people know what these guys are all about, right? Do we really need to have them beat it up back and forth? I don't know, but we will provide it for you here on 106.3, 106.7, and 105.9 KMED. We'll take care of you, all right? Or you could go out and drink heavily if you'd prefer. But one way or the other, we'll be talking about that tomorrow for sure. All right, we had an interesting little fire broke out. Not too far from the radio station yesterday, Table Rock, Vilas, up in that area, Four Corners area. And, boy, they just threw everything at it. Nobody wanted the big wildfire with that windy thing roaring into the city areas. And Jackson County Sheriff's Office ended up arresting a suspect on this, too. He's wanted for all sorts of other crimes. Andrew Joseph Ragsdale, he's a 68-year-old. But, essentially, they knocked the fire down. Got everything put out, and they got him for reckless burning. They charged him for reckless burning, interfering with a firefighter, unlawful possession of methamphetamine, too, and they're saying that it was power tools that ended up causing that one. Upper Applegate Fire, that one's at about 900 acres or so, more than half lined or contained, and that's pretty good news. They're still working hard on that. And today's going to be a bit of a cooler day, so that ought to help that that firefighting here. Another interesting story. Daily Courier reporting that a Grants Pass man is facing charges of attempted murder for a hit-and-run near Crescent City the other day. Left a truck driver fighting for his life. 49-year-old Aaron John Smock arrested Tuesday night near Cave Junction. And he was intercepted on Redwood Highway by OSP at the request of the California Highway Patrol. And CHP officer Adam Sepp said that the hit-and-run was reported 7 o'clock Tuesday on Redwood Highway just south, north of Hiuchi. That is on the way to Crescent City, been by there many times. And Smock is accused of ramming a 67-year-old truck driver from Crescent City with his car, pinning the trucker to the right front wheel of his rig, and then fleeing north toward Oregon. So that's why he is going to be facing charges of attempted murder. So that's the latest on that story. Thanks to the Daily Courier for that note here. Capital Chronicle had something interesting, and yeah, it's from Salem, basically news from Salem. And there was a big piece from Kathleen George and Scott Sims. We have to do something about the schools. It's time to start doing something about the schools right now. And it goes through the standard thing where school districts are facing big cuts in large ones. Oregon school finances have not been in greater jeopardy for decades. Large Oregon school districts cutting millions of dollars from their budget. Medford 549C, one of them, we've talked about that here, right? Translates into significant cuts in personnel and larger class sizes as state funding has failed to keep pace with inflation and expanding expectations, they say. Well, join the club. I mean, we're all kind of facing the same sort of situation. We're having to do more with less or the same with less. That's what it is in the real world here, too. But they're saying that the challenge faced by public education runs deeper than budgets. Schools have inherited a new generation of students and along with them a new paradigm for education. Students in K through 12 school classrooms, demonstrably different than their counterparts just 20 years ago. Of course, they did happen to note that Facebook founded in 2004. Educating these students require different teaching methods, updated classrooms, and a wider array of support. And they say it requires a different approach to school funding that recognizes new demands on students, teachers, and support staff. Okay, so the $25,000 to $30,000 per year that is spent in, as an example, the Grants Pass School District 7 or Three Rivers versus the $12,000 on the high end that Cascade Christian somehow manages to educate a child with here in Southwest Oregon. And it's, by the way, pretty elite education from the sounds of it. So the $25,000 to $30,000 is not enough, according to the Capital Chronicle, and that we need a new paradigm. Of course, the part that they did not mention in this little opinion piece, which is just trying to find a way to get more money slithering into the union-backed system here in the state of Oregon, is that parents have been voting with their feet, and they're losing enrollment. They're not liking the product. Right, they're not liking the product, then there are more and more parents that are doing this and walking away from it, whether homeschooling or taking them over to Christian or private school or doing, you know, finding some other way of doing it rather than, okay, let's see, turn your kids over to the unionized teaching staff and then have the Oregon Education Association advocate for changing the gender of your child, and you're not supposed to know or complain about it. Now, I know I'm painting that rather simply and with a broad brush, but yeah, what happened with COVID is that parents saw the crap that was being done with the kids and said, nope, I'm not. And the ones who aren't paying attention are still sending their kids there, or they're just not able to, you know, get their kids out. I understand. It's a tough thing. I couldn't have homeschooled my kids back in the day either. It's a big deal, all right? But so Oregon Capital Chronicle says the solution is just more money and a new paradigm. Yikes. Now, when they talk about different kids and the social media and the various other things and the pressure and this and that and the other, Oregon Live has an interesting almost response to what they're talking about, although I bet they didn't intend it to be this way. Oregon Live reporting today, North Clackamas schools will lock away all students' cell phones all day at all their middle and high schools. School board members say they expect the move will improve the educational climate for both students and teachers. Board Chair Jenna Benaloga said, "This is about caring for the kids and their emotional and mental stability and their education. We all know from hearing from the teachers how much time is taken out of the day to simply wrangle the phones. So I think we're headed in the right direction." The suburban school district is the fourth largest in the Portland area. They got 17,000 students, so this is not like a small town place. School board voted unanimously to spend $300,000 to purchase cell phone disabling pouches last week. And they're made by a California startup, name of Yonder, rapidly emerging as the market leader as schools and governments worldwide try to crack down on the cyberbullying and reduce distracted, disengaged behavior during school hours. So Capital Chronicle says the problem is lack of money. North Clackamas says the kids are too distracted by the phones and can't get anything done. Who do you think is more correct? Yeah, okay. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, North Clackamas. We'll see about that. It's I tell you, if you disable the phones for these kids, can you imagine there are the helicopter parents that, well, gosh, if they're not able to text message or interact with their kids and get in touch with them 24/7, 365, wherever they happen to be, they get really upset. It may be more of a problem with the parents. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. A lot of times the school boards have had to fight the parents over this stuff, not necessarily the kids. The kids are kind of like, oh, okay, all right, can't have the phone. But actually paying attention to the classroom instruction could be a good thing, don't you think? You're on the Bill Myers Show. This is KMED and 99.3 KBXG.
The Sherm's Markets Jackson County Fair. It's an ag venture. July 16th through the 21st. Enjoy great entertainment, food, 4-H FFA exhibits, carnival rides and games, and more. Wednesday, July 17th, KTVL 10 and Hunter Communications present 38 Special at the Bi-Mart Amphitheater. With Southern Rock smash hits like Rockin' Into the Night, Caught Up in You, Fantasy Girl, Back Where You Belong, and Hold On Loosely. Just hold on loosely. But don't let go. Since you've been gone. Lawn seats are free with fair admission, but you're going to want to get close for this one. Reserve your seat starting at just $45. It's the Sherm's Markets Jackson County Fair, July 16th through the 21st. It's an ag venture. Get tickets now at theexpo.com. That's theexpo.com.
Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford. NoWiresNow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided by Dish.
Do you take safe drinking water for granted? If you have a well for your water, no one's monitoring what's in your water. It's up to you to be sure that the water you and your family are drinking is safe and free of contaminants. Get your well tested now. Grants Pass Water Lab offers next day results for bacteria tests and a speedy 3 to 5 days for a full reporting that meets all state requirements. Online at gpwaterlab.com. Independent and serving the Rogue Valley for over 40 years.
Hi, I'm Lisa with Pacific Service Supply, and I'm on KMED and KCMD.
622. Appreciate you being here this morning. We were talking about education a moment ago, and Capital Chronicle talking about we need a new financial paradigm. I know the $25,000 to $30,000 a year that most of the public systems are spending on the kids is just not enough. And meanwhile, North Clackamas says we're going to ban the cell phones, middle and high school. Nope. Put them in little pouches, and they're not going to be binging and bonging and bugging the kids all day. We'll see how that works. Michael Shaw's here. Hey, Michael, you wanted to weigh in on that little conversation. What are you thinking?
Well, I've always been a fan of the funding should follow the child that's in the educational system. The money doesn't belong to the school. It actually belongs to the people being educated.
Yeah, well, I would agree with you in theory, but in fact, it belongs to the unions, okay? I think that's the way it's looked at right now.
That's the way it functions. But let's flesh this out a little bit. So let's say you have three kids, and your next-door neighbor has two kids, and the other next-door neighbor has one kid. So you got six kids at $30,000 a year equals what?
$180,000.
So my envisioning on this is that you allow the money to follow the kids. Those parents can form their own little homeschooling groups, and you could actually create a whole new cottage industry of private teachers. So for $180,000, you could hire a teacher to educate those six kids in a private setting that's going to be the educational standards because they're a certified teacher already, and you get a quality education on a very small group basis.
Yep. And in other words, you're talking about what I think they term it educational pods, even right now, or school pods that parents forming little co-ops of sorts, right? That kind of thing?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So let's expand that further. Let's say you had 10 kids. You got $300,000 to spend on their education. It could go to the teacher's payroll. It could go to teacher's health benefits. It could go to their outings to museums and parks and whatever. So $300,000 a year, small pod group setting, quality education, perfect.
Now, by the way, when I talked about the $25,000 to $30,000, that was the total cost in Grants Pass and Three Rivers, you know, that I do know about. I would imagine the other public school systems, when you include the overall costs, are probably relatively close or relatively similar, right? I just think that's it. And I'm also including capital budgets, everything that is spent each year toward every student. I think that's how you have to look at this kind of stuff.
Right. They take the overall budget and they chop it up and say it's $30,000 per kid. So I'm assuming that New York City's a bit higher, rural Missouri's a bit lower, you know. But if you take a $30,000 average across the country, I think that's pretty correct.
Now, there is this push to get education freedom, to have the funding follow the kids. You know, and July 5th, by the way, is the deadline to get those, what do they call them? Not petitions, but yeah, I guess they are the voter petitions, right? The voter signature pages into there. Hey, now, are you a resident of Washington at this point, or do you still live in Oregon? I forget where your residency is.
No, I'm officially a resident of Washington, sad to say.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, having two businesses that I own in Oregon, I still have an interest, a concern of what happens up throughout the whole Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, but I guess you're not surprised, though, that Capital Chronicle out of Salem would say the problem is the funding, right? The money. You know, there's just not enough money.
That doesn't surprise me at all. It's always more money, more money, more money, more money, you know. What was the Jerry Maguire? Show me the money.
Show me the money. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It would be nice to the challenge. I think as much as I would love to see the funding follow the kids, I don't know. There is such a hammer lock on people's minds still. The vast majority of minds at this point that somehow education only comes from a unionized workforce with a government yellow school bus going to a government building with government employees everywhere. That's going to be a tough one to crack, don't you think, overall?
Well, absolutely, because we sort of train the parents that it's not their responsibility to raise their kids.
Ah.
You know, we've trained the parents that it's the school's responsibility. It's the government's responsibility to raise their kids for them.
I delivered my dummy to you. It's your job now to fix them up, right? That kind of thing.
Yeah, well, but look at the other solution to an existing problem. All the parents screaming about the cost of childcare. Well, you have two income families. Now, all of a sudden, you don't need to have that second income family. You've got a mother who, or a father, it doesn't matter which, who is capable of teaching their kids, and there's that second income by taking care of your own kids and training and teaching your own kids.
That's very interesting, too. Hey, I really appreciate the call there.
You avoid that child care issue of $3,000 a month.
All right. Sounds like a point. Boy, is that what it costs now? Child care, $3,000 a month? Really?
I think if I remember correctly, someone was talking a couple weeks ago in a group that I was with, and they said that they spend about $2,000 a month on child care while mom goes to work.
Boy, if mom's going to work, she better be making a whole hell of a lot more than $2,000, right? In other words, you got to be making some money to make that pencil, right?
Well, you figure that just to break even, she's got to be making $4,000 because she's got to pay taxes out of it, and then you got to pay child care, so she break even, she should be making $4,000.
Yeah. Well, that's another example where I think feminism sold women a raw deal in which they said that, you know, your highest purpose in the United States of America is to work in a corporate cube farm day after day for years and years and years. But it's for we men to do that. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. What am I doing here? But thank you, Michael. 770-5633. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Good morning, Bill. It's Lynn in Phoenix.
Hi, Lynn. How are you?
Well, I'm good. And this is great news about the cell phones. I think the LA school district just banned them, too. And you're right about the parents. They freak out. And like when I was substituting, sometimes I would try to get the kids to put their phone away because they're texting, and they would be like, "That was my mom."
I would say, "So?"
Yeah, you're 17 years old and you need your mommy all day long. But here's the real elephant in the room. It's the vaccines. These kids are sick. I mean, it is the phones, but it's also the vaccines. The kids are sick. They don't feel well. I talked to one student who had 3 autoimmune diseases. She's 17 years old. There's a tissue box in every class because pretty much all the kids have allergies and they need access to blow their nose all day long. Hmm. They don't feel good. And that's a big reason why they're not learning, in addition to all the other influences.
Now, that's an interesting experience that you had, having been a substitute in the system. Okay. Wow. But that's another example in which we've been conditioned that everything that's going wrong with the kids, it can never be that, right?
Right. They won't look at that. So really, as you guys are already talking about, the only answer is school choice, which is going to be an epic battle in Oregon.
Yep.
But there are those, if you haven't signed ballot measures, that they're the petition to get on the ballot, please do and get all your friends to sign. I think they could possibly pass because the schools are so bad. But they're creating these generations of sick kids, and that's not even counting the special needs kids, who also were probably, in most cases, brought to that condition of autism or whatever their issue is that's so serious they can't be in a regular classroom, probably the battery of vaccines.
Well, you know, correlation is not always causation. We've heard that before.
But we won't even look.
Yeah, no, the system will not even look at this because we just assumed. I know. I think now I grew up in the 1960s. I went to school first. I didn't go to kindergarten, didn't have to. But kindergarten, when I went to first grade 1967, I think there were two or three immunizations, and that was it. I think there was the polio, right? Polio and maybe
polio,
measles,
MMR, or just measles.
It could have been just a measles shot, you know, those sort of things. And now we're in the neighborhood of, what, 25 to 30?
72 doses of 16 different vaccines by the age of 18.
Huh.
And they keep adding the manufacturers have a liability shield, so they have a great incentive to just keep adding vaccines to the schedule. They get them approved by the CDC, or FDA, which just rubber stamps them, and then the states put them on the mandatory. Now, Oregon doesn't mandate all 72 doses, but pediatricians will sometimes fire you from the practice because they get bonuses for getting the majority of their practice.
And then the Oregon Medical Board will go after the doctors that that go against that orthodoxy. What was it? What was the doctor up in Portland, the Portland area?
Yeah, Dr. Paul Thomas.
Paul.
By the way, he did have a peer-reviewed published study because he had a lot of unvaccinated kids in his practice, and there are some other studies now also that have come out. And there's just no comparison. Unvaccinated kids are far healthier, and vaccinated kids are far sicker. And there's a new book out called Vaxxed versus Unvaxxed, Let the Science Speak.
Well, I know that this is kind of going down. You remember the famous quote with Bill Gates talking about reducing the population of the world, and with carbon, you know, he's talking about the carbon at that TED talk, and he said, "Well, you know, with vaccines and various other things, that we can make a difference." Paraphrasing, of course.
Yeah, I think that quote was taken out of context, but on the other hand,
he's down with that program. Okay, let's just agree.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's down with
he's
that.
Totally about reducing population,
mm-hmm.
and all these elites are about it.
Yeah, well, except for their own population, isn't that interesting?
Well, I don't know. They don't have that many kids.
Well, have they sterilized their kids? I don't know.
No.
Right.
It'd be interesting to know if they got the whole bank of vaccines.
All right. Hey, well, I appreciate the call as always, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Let me see if I can grab a quick one here. Ilya Shapiro is going to join me here in a couple of minutes from Manhattan. We're going to talk about some Supreme Court decisions. Hi, who's this? Good morning. Welcome.
This is Jean.
Hey, Jean. What's up? What's on your mind?
Okay, you're talking about the schools.
Yeah.
My daughter and granddaughter have three kids that they are basically raising.
Uh-huh.
They send the kids to school. They come home after work. They teach them how to read and write and do arithmetic.
Sure.
The things that should have been taught in school.
So they're still working with the kids even after coming home from the school. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Do they get off work, they teach them how to read, write, do arithmetic, and all the stuff that they should have been learning in school.
Would be interesting if you could sue for not delivering what you promised. Wow. Gene, thanks for sharing that story. I imagine they would like the funding to follow their children, too, because obviously they're paying money that's not going for anything good. Appreciate the call there. 635. Ilya Shapiro joins me here in a couple of minutes after news on KMED and 99.3 KBXG.
Looking for reliable roofing experts? Turn to the family-owned gem of our community, Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc., your go-to for metal roofing solutions, offering 25-year workmanship guarantee on all projects. New construction, re-roofing project, residential or commercial, they've got you covered. This experienced team ensures a stress-free experience from start to finish. Choose quality. Choose Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. for your metal roofing needs. Call today, get an estimate tomorrow, 541-941-3736.
Looking for a safe place to store your RV, trailer, or boat? Hardcastles offers a secure storage lot located conveniently on-site with a keypad entry. With spots filling up quickly, stop by today to reserve yours. While you're there, check out the fully stocked line of enclosed, dump, flatbed, and utility trailers. Hardcastles' friendly and experienced staff are always available to help you find what you need. Open weekdays 8:30 to 5, Saturdays 9 to 3. Hardcastles, where the customer is king.
Latest news brought to you by locally owned and operated Artisan Bakery Cafe in South Medford. It's a full-service cafe offering breakfast, lunch, and specialty coffees. You'll be wowed one bite at a time.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. The Upper Applegate fire is now nearly 900 acres and 55% contained. Despite winds overnight, firefighters were able to hold lines and keep spotting to a minimum. The Darlene fire just east of Lapine is now over 2,600 acres, 30% contained, but still considered a threat to over 1,000 homes and buildings. We're number 8. Oregon ranks 8th in the nation on the Merit Composite Cost of Living Index. It includes consumer prices, taxes, fuel, housing, and utility costs. In essence, it means that it's cheaper to live in 43 other states than Oregon. The worst of the worst, Hawaii, California, and Massachusetts. As the 4th of July approaches, the Oregon Marine Board, in conjunction with county sheriffs around the state and OSP, are participating in Operation Dry Water, the 4th through the 6th, to bust drunk and drugged boaters. The consequences of a buoy conviction is possible jail time, a $6,200 fine, and a loss of boating privileges. Bill London, KMED.
Summertime is truck time in Southern Oregon, so I'm going to keep the $445 a month deal going on Ford F-150s. Joel here at Butler Ford and Truck Center. Tow the boat or camper for only $445 a month and a new Ford F-150. Go haying, hunting, or hauling for only $445 a month and a new Ford F-150. Whatever you do in your truck, make sure you do it in one from Butler Ford and Truck Center, where I'll show you how to lease a brand new Ford F-150 for only $445 a month. And let's talk about Ford certified pre-owned vehicles. We're the dealership that sells any make and model as Ford Blue certified. Ford backs up these pre-owned vehicles with a comprehensive warranty and roadside assistance. Butler says yes to easy financing to everyone. Butler says yes to $445 a month on a new F-150. And Butler says yes to certified pre-owned vehicles with warranty. Butler Ford and Truck Center, just 12 short minutes south of Medford, right off of exit 19, where you know we've got your truck, your SUV, your certified pre-owned hybrid and electric vehicle.
36-month lease payments and 7,500 miles per year with 7,500 cash or trade to a sound, excluding tax, license, title, and 250 dealer dot fee on vehicle with cap cost of $42,884. Approved financing through Ford Credit. Offer expires 7/9/24.
Welcome back to the Bill Meyer Show, 106.3 KMED.
Ilya Shapiro is a big legal brain, and just proud to have him on the show every now and then when we can pick his brain on what has been going on with the Supreme Court and various other issues. He's a senior fellow and director of constitutional studies at the Manhattan Institute. Ilya, it's a pleasure having you back on. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good to be with you, and I'm sure in your part of the country, you're all waiting for the ruling about the homeless encampments.
Oh, we sure are, and I'm hoping that they don't kick the city of Grants Pass out due to standing.
That happened in the abortion pill case as well, so it's becoming a theme this term.
Yeah, and basically what Ilya's here to break down this morning, Murphy v. Missouri, and this was about, is it okay essentially for the federal government to twist the arm or jawbone a social media company and then have them censor people, censor Americans on the government's behalf? That's essentially what that was all about. Or am I too simplistic on the way that is?
No, that's right. The question is when government colludes with tech companies, then there's a question of how you characterize that relationship. Is it coercion? Is it enticement? Is it cooperation? But anyway, when they get together to do things that if the government were doing directly, would be a First Amendment violation. How do you deal with that from a constitutional perspective?
And the Supreme Court ended up essentially punting by saying that there was no standing. And could you help us understand standing? And maybe, and I'll ask you some other questions about this too, how this broke down.
Right. Standing is the basic idea that to have your day in court, you have to be directly injured by the action that you're suing over. So you can't just say, I don't like that government action, I'm going to sue the government. I don't like what my neighbor did, I'm going to sue him. There has to be a direct connection, direct causal link between what you're alleging the party you're suing the government or otherwise is doing and the harm that you suffered, and the court is capable, has the authority and the means to remedy the harm, either by giving you damages or issuing an injunction to block the action, something like that. And what the Supreme Court said yesterday, the 6-3 majority, was that all of these swirling allegations of, oh, I've been censored or shadow banned or my speech has been taken down, you haven't proved a connection. You know, it may well be that those private companies harmed you in some way, but you're suing the government and you haven't connected the dot from what the government has said or done or whatever, that First Amendment violation you're alleging.
Okay, given that it is so secretive and so dirty, how do you prove that?
Yeah, it's really hard. There's a question already among legal scholars on Twitter and in general, I know among people that I talk to, about whether Barrett's opinion about no standing says that nobody in effect can sue, because unless there's a complete smoking gun, you know, evidence that that you unearth that a government official orders a private company executive do this, or you're going to get audited, you know, some smoking gun like that comes out, as happened in the case of NRA versus Bulo earlier this term, where some New York officials basically told financial institutions not to do business with the NRA, and that was well documented. The NRA was hurt, and that was a unanimous opinion in their favor. So barring that kind of direct thing here, where it's, you know, nudges and winks, and also the tech companies are sympathetic ideologically to the government's program, much harder to establish. So is the opinion, even though it's only on standing, does it effectively bar the door to any kind of direct action against what the government's doing, or do we need to find kind of a better case to find it? I don't know the answer to that.
Boy, you know, Ilya, it's so simple. We look at this with a common sense point of view, is that everybody knows how this kind of works. It's, you know, some FBI toad or someone in the intelligence agency goes and more or less says, hey, you know, we've been friends. We have a lot of conversations here. Really nice social media program you have here. It'd be a shame if something happened to it. So you'd like to cooperate. Of course you would, wouldn't you? Yeah, of course we'd like to cooperate. You bet. You bet, Mr. Unelected Bureaucrat. You know that's how this game is played. And the fact that they punted on this just, I know.
And you know what? It even, you know, you're absolutely right, but it even goes more subtle than that. You don't have to have that kind of implied threat, you know, mafia-style implied threat. You can also just, a savvy tech executive will be like, huh, it would be good for us because we know, you know, there's a lot of politicians talking about maybe regulating us in some way. We should curry favor with the administration. Why don't we ask them what sorts of information they would like, you know, that they don't like, that they consider to be misinformation or disinformation. So it doesn't even have to originate with the government. We, you know, there can be this kind of collusive scheme, which is even subtler, but no less of a harm to private individuals' First Amendment rights to speak.
What would have been the ask, or what was the ask of Murthy v. Missouri? I did not look as deeply into this. I know that you and Tim Rosenberger, your fellow legal fellow, filed an amicus brief in this case. So I'm just curious what you said in this brief and what...
Right. Well, the lower courts had enjoined government officials from communicating with or meeting with tech executives to prevent this kind of you know, nefarious collusion, coercion, what have you. And so the ask was to keep in place, to affirm what, in this case, the Fifth Circuit had the injunction that they had put in place. Our brief fleshed out some of the harm experienced by people who had been injured by the COVID vaccine. You know, they were not engaged in conspiracy theories or anything. They were just kind of posting information about here's what I felt, here's how here's what helped me recover, here's a support group you can join, that kind of information that was banned and downgraded and all sorts of things like that. So we were kind of fleshing out how exactly this worked in practice.
Okay. By the way, I'm speaking with Ilya Shapiro. He's a senior fellow and director of constitutional studies at the Manhattan Institute, a wonderful institute, in my opinion, too. And we'll put all the information up so you can find out more and read up on what they're up to. So what then would have to happen in the future for someone to be able to actually file a Murthy v. Missouri type case again to actually, well, I guess in some ways, if people who have social media accounts don't have standing on something like this, I guess who does? Who does, Ilya? I guess that's my question. I'm sorry to be frustrated about this.
No, that's exactly right. It's the government is never going to say, well, rarely. I mean, this is an instruction to government officials to be subtle and clever about how they what's sometimes called jawbone these companies to do what they'd like. It doesn't have to be the president. It could be whoever makes a speech, puts out a press statement saying, we've seen a proliferation of people posting ill-informed statements about XYZ, whatever that topic is. I think it's irresponsible for the social media companies to allow that to proliferate. That's all it takes. And then how do you draw the connection, based on Barrett's opinion yesterday, how do you draw the connection between that sort of statement and any one individual instance of shadow banning or blocking or what have you? By the rationale of the court opinion, that's okay. Hmm. So nobody would have standing. So that's a problem.
All right. Ilya, since you are director of constitutional studies and you've read the Constitution deeply, I've read it not so deeply, but enough times over the years, where in the Constitution does it actually mention standing? I've never been able to discern that.
Well, it's not just in constitutional law, in tort law, in all of Anglo-American jurisprudence, there are background concepts of what gets you into court. And this is one of these prudential doctrines that the Constitution alludes to in the sense that there has to be a case or controversy. And those are legal term of arts that mean that one party harmed another party, the allegation goes, and here is the controversy. They violated this federal law, this state law, this provision of the Constitution. They harmed me here. Here are my damages, or I would like them to stop this going forward. So it's kind of a background principle of just how the legal system operates.
Hmm. How is it then, if you have standing, you have to have a direct connection, is what you had talked about here. That's what Amy Coney Barrett ended up saying.
There's a keep of jurisprudence in all areas of law of what a direct connection or a causal link really is.
Then how does a gangrene person living in Massachusetts, let's say, end up filing a lawsuit against the Bureau of Land Management here in Southwest Oregon over the lily-livered snail sucker of some sort and suing on environmental torts and doing those kind of things, because there's no direct connection. They don't even live here. I'm just wondering how those people somehow magically have standing and yet we don't have standing in this kind of a case. Or maybe it's just different.
In environmental law, it's typically not some individual living in a different part of the country. It's typically some organization, whether it's the, there's lots of, environmental groups that they're going to be harmed by doing this or that.
But even then, the organization doesn't live in the woods. You see what I'm getting at? You're not
that's
there.
True.
Right.
Yeah. Often the EPA will, assist them in that. And if it's a proper subject for federal or state regulation, then it works in some way like that. But you're right. There have been standing is an issue is a tool that courts do interpret more broadly or more narrowly to avoid having to reach more controversial or more substantive issues. That's for sure. And so my criticism of yesterday's decision is that it's a cop out. That it's whatever you think of standing law, this is clearly the court did not want to have to update the rule of jawboning of what constitutes the government's use of a private agent to do its unconstitutional dirty work. Didn't want to have to reach that or draw the new lines for the digital world, and so avoided it by coming up with what I think is a standing opinion that doesn't pass muster.
Given that the system, and when I'm talking about the system, you know, is openly hostile in many ways to many of the Supreme Court justices, and is there a possibility that they're somewhat broken and not wanting to upset the apple cart too much? I'm asking for an opinion or maybe draw a conclusion or maybe some conjecture. But Supreme Court justices have not been protected too much, as you well know, especially conservative ones. Might that have had anything to do with you know, not wanting to poke the administrative state too much? Just curious what you might think about that.
I don't know. I mean, we'll see. We'll see what some of the other cases that are coming down the pike. Still have 12 or 14 cases, depending how you count, over the next few days. As soon as 9 minutes from now, I got to get off this call soon to check, to hit refresh on my browser to see what the justices come up with today. But, you know, they've decided big Second Amendment cases, of course, the Dobbs, the abortion case. They decide lots of hot-button issues every year. But maybe they get to a point in those cases that, well, we can't avoid it any longer, or we can't avoid it anyhow. But when they can reach kind of a technical procedural solution to avoid a more merits-based ruling, maybe they will. And John Roberts has been that's been his big project, the Chief Justice.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking a few minutes on this. I know you got it because the decisions will start coming. By the way, you don't think that the Trump immunity one is going to come out this morning. I don't think the court wants to be the news or the news story. Do you?
I mean, that decision, whenever it comes down, is going to make news, obviously. So whether it's today ahead of the debate or tomorrow right after the debate, they're gonna get it at some point. So I don't think that sort of timing is really playing into when it comes out. When it's ready, they'll release it.
All right, very good. I appreciate the take, and thank you so much, Ilya. I know you got to go and check that out, and good going. We look forward to the next analysis coming from Manhattan Institute. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and you can also read my Substack, Shapiro's Gavel.
Shapiro's Gavel. I'm going to sign up for that. Thank you very much. Glad to know.
All right.
All right, 6:53. This is KMED and 99.3 KBXG.
Patriot Electric is bringing power to the people this summer with their Generac generator giveaway. Go to KMED.com and enter to win a GP6500-watt Generac portable generator from Patriot Electric, your local Generac generator dealer that installs a full line of generators to keep your property powered up during outages. Visit KMED.com for details and enter to win now through July 23rd. Patriot Electric is your authorized Generac dealer for energy independence. Power to the people by patriots.
The following preview has been rated immature for all audiences except metal roof enthusiasts and small children. In the not-too-distant sunbaked future, in a world where leafy debris and pine needles collect on unsuspecting homeowners' roofs, where just one seemingly harmless airborne ember could cause a catastrophic fire, two unassuming technicians.
He's talking about us.
Embark on an epic journey to fabricate and install fire-resistant metal roofs on Southern Oregon buildings. Heroes will rise. Fire hazards will fall.
This is awesome.
This summer, call the Metal Roofing Division at Fontana Roofing and witness the sheer...
So what do you think?
So it's like we're superhero firefighters except without the supernatural powers, form-fitting costumes, and inherent danger?
Exactly.
Can we drive big, shiny red trucks?
Maybe in the sequel.
For an epic fire-resistant roof, call Fontana Roofing's Metal Roof Division. Visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
Catch the Medford Rogues in action this weekend at Harry and David Field. The Rogues clash with the Fresno A's three-game series Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Buy tickets online at MedfordRogues.com or call the box office and pick up before the game. Box office opens at 5:45. Take the family out to the old ballpark for perfect baseball weather this weekend as the competition heats up at Harry and David Field. Visit MedfordRogues.com for schedules, tickets, plus fun nightly promotions and events. MedfordRogues.com.
106.3 KMED. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Deep in the woods of North Carolina, an extremist eco group called Earth First bewails the violation of American nature.
I want to mourn!
Yes, yes, yeah. I know.
Of all the old growth trees I've seen! And tell them that we love them!
Yes, indeed, and we do love our trees. We do love our trees. In fact, we love, you know, that was actually an old clip from a few years ago with a documentary on the gangrenes. And the gangrenes, I think, are getting a little more sophisticated now. I was thinking about that particular clip this morning as I was reading the Rogue Valley Times. So I'm reading the RV Times, and I'm looking at Andy Atkinson's story. I don't know if you've heard about this yet, but this is the first I've heard about this. The title, First in the Nation, Oxygen Park in Medford, a model for new nonprofit. Oxygen Park. Oh, okay. So what makes Oxygen Park so special? But anyway, this is the story. Andy Atkinson writing, Oxygen Park in southwest Medford is more than just a lush oasis fed by Elk Creek and home to turtles, deer, and the cheerful chirps of birds that roost in the marsh grasses. It's the brainchild of Medford residents Buzz Thielman and his wife Sherry. The park is a model for a new nonprofit that hopes to attract corporations wanting to burnish their green credentials. Oh, it's a racket, a nonprofit racket. You know, I've been half joking for a lot of years that most of the time, as soon as you hear the term nonprofit, you have to look a little more deeply here. But anyway, Thielman says, this is the first in the nation, said Thielman, an author and past owner of RHT Energy, a Medford company that pioneered alternative energy systems in the region. It is a way for corporations to sequester carbon and produce oxygen. This is a model for what could be accomplished in other communities. In other words, Thielman is just looking at, well, you know, we have this marsh kind of property in the back here. And he put on his Elon Musk hat. He put on his Elon Musk hat and figured, okay, I could do something really politically. I mean, first, I believe in this to begin with. I'm just saying that. And we've got this swampy, marshy thing with the trees and the turtles and everything else. And I guess what you take nonprofit donations, right? And then corporations can then greenwash. So I guess ExxonMobil can then drill for oil, but they send some money to Oxygen Park in Medford. I guess this is kind of how it works. He estimates, going back to the story here, he estimates the 5.8-acre park located at the corner of Lozier Lane and Arlington Drive and filled with cottonwoods and willows generates 48 metric tons of oxygen a year. And one local corporation has already expressed interest in sponsoring a similar type of park, according to Thielman. And the park is bisected by Lozier Lane. It's an area, idea it's been percolating for a lot of years, apparently, according to this story. And originally, Thielman thought about buying more than 50 acres in a wooded area outside Medford. Unfortunately, the property he considered was severely burned in a fire. And a few years ago, a developer who had no interest in keeping that marshland sold the property to the Thielmans. In the meantime, the name Oxygen Park was trademarked this year, and Thielman founded the nonprofit. And so the mission of Oxygen Park is to secure land in perpetuity to produce oxygen and sequester carbon. And while he's working on the details, he took 6 cubic yards of debris, including tents, mattresses, a sofa, and garbage from Oxygen Park because it was a homeless bummy park before. But anyway, it's good to have it cleaned up. But, you know, the greens are getting much more sophisticated. In other words, you have something which has already been there anyway, and you like it. And okay, how can we make some money out of this one, or how can we get donations? And the corporations say, well, that's okay. All right, we might be drilling for oil that people actually need, but we'll send money to Oxygen Park. I think they call that greenwashing, don't they? Yeah, but that's the latest in the nonprofit rackets. We have the homeless rackets and the energy rackets and the carbon rackets, and God bless them all. But, you know, it's what the law allows there. But it's creative. It's very creative. It's a lot more creative than, you know, being like the eco freaks going, we love the trees. You know, there we go. It's 7 o'clock. Hi, KMED. and KBXG. Who's this? Good morning.
This is Randy in Ashland.
Hey, Randy. How you doing this morning?
I just had to chime in. You know what the fuel is for Oxygen Park?
Carbon.
Carbon dioxide.
Carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide. So, you know, if we really wanted to support Oxygen Park, we should go over there with carbon dioxide fire extinguishers and shoot the carbon in there. It'll grow faster. It will.
No, just drive more SUVs.
Oh, okay. Drive SUVs around Oxygen Park. It's
there you go.
It's symbiotic, right, Randy? Symbiotic.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's called the carbon cycle. We were taught that in physical science in sixth grade, but of course they don't teach it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting, Randy. I appreciate the call. Thanks for that. For Oxygen Park. Hi. Good morning.
Hi, Bill. This is Vicky from the Applegate.
Hi, Vicky. By the way, your Oxygen Park has been getting burned up, and they know, by the way, that was human caused. Just want to let you know.
Oh, my God. Well, if we didn't have a fire, we could have Oxygen Valley out here compared to Medford.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, that's it. The Applegate should trademark itself. Well, enough of that. Oxygen Park's fine. We're Oxygen Valley. Yeah. I like that. Take that. Yep. And by the way, set up a nonprofit racket so that people will pay you.
Yeah.
In order to say that, you know, you're helping keep the oxygen in our valley.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, what keeps me up about this park is when I hear marsh, I think mosquitoes. And what do you do when you think mosquitoes? Mosquito spray. I mean, how much, you know, it's not clean air if everybody's spraying themselves down for mosquitoes.
Well, I know our mosquitoes aren't as big of a problem around here for the most part. Well, maybe they are in Oxygen Park. So maybe Oxygen Park will be the source of the next pandemic, you know, when the infected mosquitoes come out, right?
Ben, I just had a quick comment about the homeless.
Sure.
My husband and I recently went up to see our granddaughter graduate in Salem, which is, oh, my God, a shock from somebody who lives in the Applegate to go to the city like that. But we were driving to the fairgrounds, and we passed a store. I don't even know what store it was, but there was about 13 people in a heroin-induced comas. I mean, I've seen people, you know, slumped over once or twice in town when I drove in Medford, but this was like a whole band of people that were totally unconscious and all at once. It really, really was a shock to me. I'd never seen anything like that before. And people are driving by, kids are walking by.
Oh, yeah. It's been totally normalized ever since Measure 110 and beyond. It really has been.
It was incredible.
And I'm hoping that between that and perhaps maybe a good reading or a good ruling, rather, from the Supreme Court, maybe a better control can be made on that dereliction, okay? Appreciate the call. Thanks for sharing it, Vicky. Let me go to line 4. Good morning. This is Bill, and you're on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Hello?
Bill.
Yes.
Aaron, nice to chat with you this morning.
Hi, Aaron. What's on your mind?
Just calling in about the Oxygen Park. I live over there kind of by the high school, and long story short, we built a bunch of houses back there before Lozier was connected to Orchard Home Drive. And that very park, you go right where the sign is if you're driving towards the new Stewart Market. Right there is where all the high schoolers would smoke their weed and fight.
Oh, no, they took away the fighting and smoking weed place. That's not fair.
They just cleared it out a little better. But, I mean, that place is a dump. You know, I mean, it's you know.
But you know, hey, yeah, listen, you have to give them – you have to give them kudos on creativity, all right? How's the, you know, how can you work the racket in the current eco-freak system, right?
Well, exactly. And all that is, I feel bad for the people on the backside there because it is just a swampy, nasty, muddy, disgusting mess, you know? I mean, at least somebody's trying to do something positive, but from my point of view, that place is just a garbage dump asshole, as one person would put it.
Well, you know, now the thing is, though, the Thielmans did take out a whole bunch of garbage. Now, if they're cleaning it up, that's wonderful. But I do find it interesting. Okay, how can we pay then to keep the homeless, the bums, the fighting school kids out of there, and the weed smoking going on? Well, we'll turn it into Oxygen Park, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Gotta love them.
That's my two cents, but that's the starter spot, or at least a couple years ago. Now the kids go other places, like directly in front of my house.
Well, the last thing where the kids want to hang out and smoke weed and fight is a place called Oxygen Park. That doesn't fit.
Oh, yeah. The weed smoke diminishes the oxygen.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. That's... Thanks for the call. Oh, gonna love it. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome. Hello.
Oh, Bill?
Yeah.
This is Jeff and Selma.
Hey, Jeff, what are you thinking?
I got 37 acres of trees.
My gosh, you could have, like, Oxygen Pavilion.
Yeah.
Why don't you trademark Oxygen Pavilion or Oxygen? Well, no, Oxygen Acres. Oxygen Acres. They did Oxygen. They trademarked Oxygen Park. You could trademark Oxygen Acres with your 37 acres, okay?
It's a horseshoe canyon here, so it could be Oxygen Canyon.
Oh, I love it. That's great.
And if I put on my Elon Musk hat, does that make me a muskrat?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it does, but he's a very wealthy muskrat or rat or whatever.
Well,
you know,
like the Mickey Mouse hats. I could make Elon Musk hats, you know, and be a muskrat.
So anyway, I think that the Thielmans have now come up with the sustainable industry for the Southwest Oregon nonprofit racket. So you better join in, Jeff, okay? Get your 37 acres working for you, okay?
Hey, we all want to be in the green, don't we?
That's right. That's the way it goes. Thank you. And I'll take one more. Hi, good morning.
This is Miner Dave.
Yes, Dave. Now, you don't have any trees around you, so I'm sorry, no oxygen for you.
No, but I was reading this article that for every ton of lithium mined, it produces 15,000 tons of carbon dioxide. So,
if that's the case, they're creating carbon dioxide then to feed Oxygen Park in Medford. It's okay.
Yeah, I just thought that was weird. They want to reduce carbon dioxide, but then they mine stuff that produces more carbon dioxide.
Well, you know, hypocrisy knows no bounds around here, okay? Good call, Dave. Thanks for that. It's 7 minutes after 7. Let's catch up on the rest of what's going on here, too. And Captain Bill's going to join me because the latest one has to do with... we were talking about this for how many years now? I said, what's going to happen? They blow the dams up, and then they're going to start looking for ways to dip helicopters. Well, Captain Bill has been observing this over in the Iron Gate. And it's almost a comedy story on Conspiracy Theory Thursday, all coming up.